You're listening to the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. Explicit language and spoilers ahead. You've been warned. And we are back for yet another episode of the Boogeyman's Closet. As always, I am Mike Alvarez.
Morris Kilver.
Unfortunately, Susie can't join us today. This month is a little hectic for her. She has a lot of prior obligations, so she couldn't be a part of this episode. But we do have two guests joining us today, one of which is a reoccurring character.
Oh! Is it Barbara Walters?
It is.
Oh, I can't wait to meet her. Oh, hey, it's Dawn.
Welcome back, Dawn. Good to hear you again.
I'm always here, guys. It's been a while. It's been like a month. But I'm not here by myself. There is somebody else here.
Yeah, we have another friend.
Yeah, that's right. It's the Scrappy Doo of the Boogeyman Closet, Mike O'May. How's everybody doing?
Pretty good. Thank you for joining us again, good sir.
I had to squeeze in a Scooby-Doo joke, as per usual.
I'm appreciative. But we are here to continue our talk about second chance films. This one is episode 106, Motel Hell. Came out in 1980. It's an hour and 41 minutes. Directed by Kevin Connor. We would know him from Beyond the Grave, The Land That Time Forgot, The House Where Evil Dwells, and At Earth's Core. This is one of those films that we did try to get on here before, and it really didn't get much love at all. But this time around, it got tied with several other choices. And seeing as I get to use my magical tie-breaking powers, I was like, screw it, I want to talk about Farmer Vincent. So we have Motel Hell. But let's go around the table and see what everyone thinks. Mike, we'll start with you today. What are your thoughts?
I really, really love this movie, and it holds up. It was a Monster Vision staple for me growing up because it was always on like TNT or TBS, and it wasn't very edited. I'm guessing because there's just a little bit of nudity and the gore is pretty tame. A lot of the stuff in this movie is implied, or it's straight up comedy. Watching it with some fresh eyes, though, I kind of noticed some pretty creepy things going on with some of the characters that I looked past and still enjoyed it. It's really good. It's really funny. It's kind of a product of the times, and I like it a lot.
What about you, Don? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, this is the craziest episode of the Beverly Hillbillies I've ever seen. I don't know what's going on in it at all. No. When I first saw Farmer Vincent, I immediately went, was that Buddy Epstein? So that's why I said that. Okay, so I have said a couple of times on this podcast that you guys should just take my horror card away because of like certain things. Like I said, it of The Birds. Like I had never seen The Birds before that time. I have never seen this movie before. I know, guys. It's okay. It's all right. I have seen it now. Did I like it? It was okay. I found it a little slow. It got to a point where I'm like, let me check the time. And it was only a half hour into the movie. I was like, oh,
that's never good.
With that being said, I'm not saying I didn't enjoy it. Cause yes, there are parts of this which are amazing. And I did love it. John Ratzenberger, I think, has always been 57 years old.
Right?
it's like that's his only age. But yeah, I don't know. I can't tell if they were trying to make a comedy or if it just turned out to be a comedy, you know, with how they filmed it. I don't think it was intentional to be comedy at parts, but it ended up being a comedy.
I can clear that up. According to the trivia, they originally wrote the script to be just a dark, messed up horror movie. And when it finally got picked up, they basically decided we're gonna make this more comedic. I think it was actually Kevin Connor who said, like, I won't do it unless it's more of a black comedy than horror. So they made it a little more silly.
Okay. But, I can see that too.
Because I mean, the subject matter is pretty dark still, no matter how you cut it.
Thank God, because the comparisons to Texas Chainsaw would have been a little too thick, and I think this movie wouldn't have the cult following that it has if it wasn't as comedic as it is.
Totally agree. Absolutely. Maurice, what about you? What are your thoughts on Motel Hell?
Well, who doesn't like cannibalistic beef jerky?
Indeed. People jerky.
I mean, that's the reason to like the movie right there. No, I also enjoy this movie. I saw it for the first time in a long time, sometime last year, I think around Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember it being different than when I used to, than I remember it. Like, I remember, for some reason, I remember a scene with where Terry goes into the barn. And I always thought that was in the basement for some reason. And then when I saw it last year, it's actually in
the kill factory
or a smokehouse.
Yeah.
But still, I enjoy the movie. My only gripe, really, is I think it's rather long. I feel like this movie should be like that hour and 20 minute kind of movie.
I'll give you that. There's a lot of meandering about in a couple scenes.
Yeah, less love triangle, more nitty-gritty about how to turn people into delectable smoked meats.
Right.
Also, I would have enjoyed a little bit more detailed on how these people were related to each other, because I thought Ida, right? Wife? Until he says sister later in the movie.
It's his sister wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then Bruce, I was like, well, wait, how is Bruce then related? Is this his brother? You know, like, because he grew up with them. So I would have liked a little more detail on that.
He's the brother husband.
And he only grew up with them until 11.
Yeah, so, when ran away.
The time frame is very weird.
Yeah. Among other things. But yeah, the time piece with this is a little bizarre. Much like most everything else about the movie, but that doesn't make it a bad movie, right?
Absolutely.
Maurice, you finish. I'm sorry. I cut you off all the time.
Go ahead.
I'd like to propose a question.
Okay. And
I'll start the boogeyman closet meandering right now. Do you think you guys have ever eaten people jerky and never knew about it? Like weird gas station beef jerky? And if you did, are you okay with it?
I mean, I'm not going to say that that's not a possibility with any beef jerky, but I have had some questionable beef jerky in my time.
So I'm not really a fan of beef jerky, so probably not, unless Slim Jim's are making it out of I don't know, Randy Macho Man Savage.
No, it's just flavored with his sweat.
I mean, you might be eating Macho Man Randy Savage. You never
exactly
know. He may not have actual hair. Slim Jims might grow out of his scalp.
I think I said that when he died too. I was like, if Slim Jims don't make him into a big Slim Jim, I'm gonna be disappointed.
I'd eat smoked Randy Savage, I think.
Just a nibble.
I mean, if like we're, you know, going on vacation in the Alps and our plane crashes, I can't promise that I wouldn't eat somebody. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, God.
I'm also with Don. I think most I've done is like Slim Jims or the, what's the Sasquatch one? Is it called Sasquatch?
Oh,
Jack Link.
Jack Link.
I don't think, maybe once I've had gas station beef jerky. If I did, I don't remember. But yeah, I try to stay away from that because I've seen too many movies.
See, I love beef jerky, so I've bought some very questionable ones in my past, but and I've had some sent to me. Like, I know both Joshes have sent me random smoked meats from Texas. So,
actually, my uncle does his own smoked meat, and so that's actually really good.
See, you never know.
Yeah, I mean, I have a food dehydrator. It's a lot of fun.
I'm pretty sure he uses venison, but
it could be people.
It could be, right.
Saying there's a chance.
There's a chance. There's like, a chance I've eaten human before.
Let's say I gave you some beef jerky. You ate it. You're like, wow, that was really good. And then I say, guess what? That's Josh Hibbard. You just ate.
I mean, I would be upset with Josh.
Would you throw up, or would you be like, well, that was, I'm mad, but that's tasty.
I'm upset, but, you know, at least it tasted good, right?
Yeah.
that's the factor. Here we go. Now, first of all, I would be upset if it's Josh Hibbard. Second of all, he's got to taste good if I have to eat that, you know. I want some flavoring on there. I want some A1 sauce on the side, just in case.
Got to season them.
Right. Josh would have not been my first pick, though, because Josh is skinny. All right.
Yeah.
I feel like I would make better jerky. I'm marbled.
Well, I mean, I would thank you for clipping the toenails, and then I'd be like, wow, Mike tastes amazing. Thank you for marinating him in your family's recipe of secret herbs and spices that you won't reveal to anybody.
Because it's a very important recipe.
Without preservatives. Because Mike is already pickled.
Well, Indeed. I almost revealed the recipe.
And then she got punched in the stomach.
What the hell was... Oh, we'll get to that.
Yeah, because because at that point, I didn't know how she was related.
Oh, that scene cracks me up. But Maurice, what were your thoughts on the rockin' soundtrack?
Oh, yeah. It was definitely Hickory Stick.
I freaking hate the music in this movie so much.
There's that one good song, and then that's it.
Oh, it's the credits, the end credits.
Yeah.
I was going to say the one the punks are listening to in the van is okay.
Yeah, that's a decent song.
But, oh my God, I hate this era of horror film or drama because you have that, like, late 70s, like, soap opera music to it. You know, it's always, I don't even know how to describe it. Like, and everything sounds like Little House on the Prairie. I can't stand it.
See, I don't mind that as much as I get bothered by that, like, southern rock that was all over the place. It's like a bad mix of disco and, like, Freebird! Because it just reminds me of, like, my family. That's all they listen to. And it's like you turn on any, like, hard rock station on any, you know, any part of the country. It's just this crap on a loop. And you're like, is there anything else? You know, like, it's just that, like, the van with the wizard spray painted on the side of it, that kind of music. And I hate it.
I mean, I can't say that I absolutely hate that type of music, but I know what you're talking about.
I like some of it. Look, I don't want to have, like, a blanket statement here, but I didn't fault Farmer Vincent for running those dirty southern rock hippies off the road and turning it into jerky.
Ivan and the Terribles.
Yes.
Oh, Lord. Now, see, this is one of those films, and I may have mentioned it on the show before. It scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. I saw this way too young. And for years, I didn't remember what the name of the movie was. All I knew was that it was a movie about a guy who was burying people up to their necks. That's the part that freaked me out, being buried up to your necks and then cutting their vocal cords. Like, that terrified me as a child. And then the end sequence, just, and I mean, it's funny now watching it, you know, as an adult, but as a kid, the hog head and chainsaw and his incessant laughing, like, I don't know, that image, like, fucked me up when I was little. It just really scared me. And I wasn't allowed to see Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And this is one of those movies me and my brother caught. I want to say it was like on Showtime, like Up All Night or so, or one of the many late night, maybe it was a movie channel, I don't know. One of those late or mid to late 80s late night cable monster movie kind of things where this would pop up and me and my brother were watching TV when we shouldn't be and end up coming across this film, which is a lot of weird movies that I saw as a kid. And it took me years until I knew what it was called. Like, I think it was, I was working at Media Play when I finally saw it in Fangoria. And I'm like, oh, that was that movie, you know? So it was like, it was this mystery of a film for me as a kid. But all I knew is it scared the hell out of me. When I saw it again as an adult, I was like, why did this scare me? Like, it was one of those, a lot of the movie I forgot about. When we get to the scene where they bury the band and Vincent pulls the one dude, or has Ida pull the one dude's head back and he goes in with the scalpel, it still sent a shiver up my spine. It was like that kind of jolting back to childhood and being like, oh yeah, that's why that scared me. You know, just like, it freaked me out. So, and I understand it is not scary by any real standard, but there are moments that give me the willies. Overall, I really like this film. It's just dumb fun. The love triangle could do a little bit without, but it's still funny for certain scenes. And there are moments that will always stick with me from this movie, like the picnic scene that we will get to. That just, it's one of those, like, what the fuck were they thinking? Like, why is that in the movie type of moments? And it always sticks in my brain. But let's go through the cast here. I didn't write down everybody. As you mentioned, oh my God, why can't I think of his name from Cheers now?
Jeffrey Katzenberger.
John. No, John Ratzenberger.
Right. John Ratzenberger. Who is Jeffrey Katzenberger?
I think he's a director. Up?
Okay. Yeah, John Ratzenberger.
What was his
second
name?
Second highest grossing actor of all time, I believe. From his cameos in Pixar films. And I think
because he's in every Pixar film.
Yeah, and the only person that surpassed that is Stan Lee.
Right. But what was his character's name on Cheers? It's bugging the hell out of me now.
Cliff.
Cliff, thank you. Cliff Clavin,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, all I could think of was Norm. And I'm like, no, Norm was his buddy.
That's George Wendt.
Yes. he has a Cliff has a great role in House 2, the second story, which one of these days we'll get to.
You should have Second Chance Part 2 where it's only part 2s.
That's not a bad idea.
Oh, it's so good idea.
But yeah, I didn't get everybody's names in here. I only got the main players, but we have Farmer Vincent Smith, played by Rory Calhoun. A lot of TV shows, but The Texan, Bonanza, Gunsmoke, Wagon Train, Starsky and Hutch, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, a movie that I will definitely get on here, even if I have to do it as a birthday pick, but Hell Comes to Frogtown. That movie is so ridiculous.
Awesome movie.
And then we have Tales from the Crypt, Oil's Well That Ends Well. That was actually the first time that John Cassier got to act as, you know, as an actor instead of just the Crypt Keeper's voice. So that was a fun episode. But we have Bruce Smith, played by Paul Link. The Waltons, Happy Days, MASH, Chips, Parenthood, 21 Jump Street, Quantum Leap, and of course, we had to, Murder, She Wrote.
Don't forget the Buffalo Bills, number 78.
Really?
I was going to say, I didn't know that.
Bruce Smith.
Bruce Smith. Like,
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. No, that, okay.
that's the character's name, though. I was confused.
Is that the same guy?
No, that's the character. Paul Link was the actor.
I thought the football player was in the movie.
No. I'm so confused.
Yeah.
No, I got
knock it off. I did not.
Then we have Ida Smith, played by Nancy Parsons. We pretty much know her from the Porky's movies, but which she's fucking fantastic in. Also, Charlie's Angels, Family Ties, The Amazing Stories, Night Court, Star Trek The Next Generation, and Ladybugs, if you guys remember that soccer movie.
You know, every time I watch this, I feel like she deserves so much better. because she's an amazing actress. I love her in Porky's, but I love her even more in this.
Yeah. No, she's really good. But I see her and I immediately picture Porky's. Like, you know, foot up on the wall, just yanking. Trying to pull that guy through the little peephole. But then we have Terry, played by Nina Axelrod, Charlie's Angels, Fantasy Island, Chips, Cobra with Stallone, and Critters 3, Critters in Manhattan. Then you have, last but not least, Reverend Billy, played by Wolfman Jack. We know him from American Graffiti, Wonder Woman, The Midnight Hour, which I would love to get on this show, and Married with Children. So had to put that on there for Maurice.
I don't know why he gets such high billing in this, because he's a glorified cameo. Right. And he must have been a bigger deal in 1980, because I only know know him from this.
Right.
You never watched Spirit of Children?
he was a radio disc jockey, wasn't he? Like a radio DJ, but he was syndicated all over the country. He was like Casey Kasem famous, is how I will put it.
And it was because of his voice.
Yeah.
You know, he had that weird, like, scratchy voice.
But then then they put him in American Graffiti, and then everybody wanted him in a movie.
Yep. But for those of you that haven't seen this film, the basic plot is a seemingly friendly farmer and his sister kidnap unsuspecting travelers and bury them alive, using them to create their special meat that they're famous for.
Allegedly.
Yes, allegedly famous for. They do have a billboard, but that's easy to do. But we open on the old Motel Hello, where the O is flashing. Ah, womp womp. I get the Motel Hell.
Do you ever wonder, I mean, I get that it's part of their capture people plot. How do they have the time to run a full-service beef jerky factory and a hotel? Just the two of them.
Right.
Well, because that's who the jerky was. It was all the people who stayed there.
Yeah, in the movie, they're only getting them off the road. I mean, I actually, no, you're right. You're right. Never mind.
Yeah,
there's, I was going to say. Awesome sequence.
That's the other sequence that always sticks in my brain. We'll get to that.
Well, there is that family. Now, were they staying there, or did they just stop by to buy the beef jerky?
Right. You know, that's a good question, because
I don't think they got away, because later on in the scene, you saw the two balloons.
Oh.
Remember the balloons? Those metal-looking, not metal, silver-looking
balloons
that the girls had? They were in the smoke shop, or not the smoke shop, where they were cooking the meat.
Yeah, and there was like the killing floor and then the smokehouse all connected.
Yeah,
But they dropped him in there because, remember, they go in and then they get scared out and they drop their balloons on.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So, yeah, no, I think I do think that either they were just there to buy some meat, or maybe they didn't pick them because they had kids. Who knows? Because, remember, Farmer Vincent has like all these weird moral codes about what he's doing.
Yeah. Look,
I need to get this out here now. I'll eat people. I'm totally down for cannibalism. But I have an age limit. So 12 and up, I draw the line.
So no people veal.
No people veal. You gotta let. I like free range people. All right, carry on, Mike. Sorry.
Real quick. I want to put this out there. I have a friend. I'm not gonna say who it is. You guys actually don't know him, but he has a pact with another friend that whoever dies first, that one of them gets to eat a bit of them. That is not a lie. It is written down. Whoever dies first, the other one gets to eat part of that person.
That is so Norwegian death metal of them.
See, now I know we're meandering right off topic, but there was, I don't know if you guys ever saw this, but there was this, like, I don't know if it was like weird stories. Like, I saw it on Tales from the Internet, which is a great YouTube channel if you guys haven't seen it. But there was this guy who I want to say lost his leg in an accident. Like, it was all messed up.
he turned into tacos?
Yes. Yes, that guy. Because he asked the doctor, can he keep his leg? And the doc, because they had to amputate it. And he was like, I guess. Like, yes. And yeah, he made his foot into tacos. He like consulted a chef on what cut would be the best for tacos. And he said, after all of that, him and his friends were all disappointed that it didn't taste that good.
What I would do if I had to lose a leg, I would take the leg and I would go to Wendy's and I'd get a cup of chili. And I put the leg in the chili and I'd be like, there's a leg in my chili. And I'd sue him and I'd be rich.
I'm just picturing like the little cup of chili with a giant human leg sticking out of it. Like full size human leg from the knee down.
It always cracked me up because that viral story from like years ago where somebody had like a toe in their chili from Wendy's or like a thumb or something, a finger.
Yeah.
And it come to find out they knew somebody that lost like a finger and they went and put it in the chili to sue them.
Right.
Like the lengths that you go just to, you know, try to get some money out of Wendy's. Put your own. Like,
it was like that episode of Family Guy where Peter's trying to teach Chris how to get out of paying a check. He takes like two bites of his soup and then pulls out an unconscious man from under the table and puts his face in the soup. And he's like, wait, there's a dead guy in my soup. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. Of course, it'll be gratis. Oh, God. Wendy's with a leg in their chili.
I could tell you stories about how people try to get free movie tickets, but that's for another time.
We need to do a Patreon. But yeah, so we open with Farmer Vincent sitting on the porch of the Motel Hello, smoking his pipe as the credits roll. He goes inside, grabs a handful of shotgun shells, and checks on his sleeping sister, Ida, while she's watching this like crazy preacher on TV that keeps like it's always on the TV in their motel, like in every room. And notice how she was sucking her thumb. Like that was creepy.
She's a special character. I think they just let her improv a lot of crazy stuff with her because it's hilarious.
Now, did you guys notice the fried chicken in the bed?
Yeah, that's like a running gag in the movie with her and fried chicken.
Right, but like at a point, I have a lot to say about that, but I was like, right off the bat, like, it's like, hey guys, she's fat. She has food in the bed. And, like, they remind us, like, it's like that, I don't know, it's the lowest hanging fruit they could go for. Like, she's fat. Look, she's fat. She's eating again. She's fat. It's like, really? Okay.
I didn't even think she was fat.
Right, but.
And
I mean,
it's just like, yeah, it is. It's lazy comedy.
Yeah. Because later on, I noticed like two mega jars of pickles on a counter, like next to each other.
Well, like she literally is making a fried chicken sundae at one point. Like, I mean, I don't mind fat jokes by any stretch. Like I found plenty of them funny, but this was just lazy. It's like, all right, whatever. But anywho. He turns on the no vacancy sign, gets in his trunk, and goes out a-hunting. And this is the first time I have a comment in here. God, I hate this fucking music. We see a couple on a motorcycle with a sidecar that's filled with luggage driving along the road. Suddenly, a tire blows out. The motorcycle veers off the road comically and into a tree, causing both passengers to fall off. Now, the way that crash happens, I couldn't stop laughing. Because the guy's trying to hold it steady, but the actor is turning the handlebars from side to side rapidly. And it's really fucking funny looking.
I love a movie driving like that where they have, like, they're clearly on the back of a pickup truck.
Right.
You know, but the way the actor drives, they would, like, drive off a cliff in 2 seconds, but they just jerk the wheel like a maniac.
Oh, yeah.
I love that gag.
But, so yeah, Farmer Vincent runs over to check on him. He sees we think the guy is dead. He makes it look like, you know, the guy is dead. Throws him in the bed of the pickup truck. And then he hears the girl moaning and moving around. So he goes and checks on her, sees that she's passed out, puts her in the car. So takes her back to his Motel Hello, which how long was he fucking gone for? Because it was night when he left. When he came back, it was morning.
I don't think he sleeps.
Yeah, maybe it's like when you go fishing, you're supposed to go at like 4 in the morning. Maybe that's what it is.
The best time for hunting people.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. At this point in the movie, we don't know he's hunting people. But we see Ida cooking breakfast inside, singing along to the radio. And this is where I'm like, yeah, they really like playing up the, hey, look, she's fat. She likes food shtick. Because she was just like cooking this massive breakfast and constantly shoving food in her face. And Vincent comes in with the girl and tells Ida to open up Granny's room. She argues with him. He yells at her to just do it. So she goes, opens up the room. He lays her down in the bed. Explains that the good Lord plucked this one away from the Grim Reaper and he intends to keep it that way.
Do you think it's Granny Sawyer?
Oh, maybe.
Crossover.
She ends up in Texas Battleland. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he tells her basically, you know, he wants to keep her safe. And she agrees to help him after protesting a bit because she's hungry. Like, in case you guys forgot, because he's like, I need your help. She's like, but I'm hungry. Like, it's like, oh, God, that's annoying. That gets on my nerves so quick in this movie. Vincent tells her that, you know, he needs her help. She agrees and tells him to go get some herbs for her. And I had to look this up because maybe I'm just an idiot. But when she said plantain, I'm like little bananas. Like, I had to look it up and realize, oh, there's actually a plantain herb as well.
Oh, good, because those bananas are gross.
Oh, I love smashed plantains.
Oh, I disagree.
Yeah, I love them. But we cut to later that day, and this is where we get the family with the two annoying twin daughters leaving the motel, while the mother proclaims loudly just how much she loves Vincent's meat. The parents send the girls outside while Vincent tries to upsell them the sampler box of meats for a whopping $2.95. And I love this scene.
Bargain!
Right? But I love this. He hands her a meat stick, and it, like, she's, you know, supposed to sample it. She barely touches it to her lips. Her eyes, like, explode out of her head, and she grabs her husband's arm like she just had an orgasm. Like, it's really bad overacting here.
Well, for, what, $2.95, you're going to get, like, 7 or 8 people in a box. That's a great deal.
That's true.
I liked what her husband said.
That he enjoys his meat.
We'd like to continue to eat your meat, Mr. Smith.
Oh, man. I didn't write that down. That's good. But outside, the little girls wander into the smokehouse, and there's some really bad ADR work here. Like, it's
throughout the whole movie. Let's just face it. It's throughout the whole movie.
Oh, it is. But this was like especially glaring because it was like these two little girls, and it sounds like they had like Bill the Grip, you know, voice over, because they're like, "Let's go into the smokehouse. You first."
And it's like, wait. Me and Susie had a discussion one time, and you guys are probably going to talk about this when you do House by the Cemetery about the little kid in that movie.
Bob is Mama.
Yeah, Bob's, wow. Fuck that kid.
The scene where he plays with his red car has to be the most jarring ADR work I've ever seen in a movie ever.
I started watching that last night because that is coming up. And man, I forgot about Bob. Like, you know.
What about Bob?
Exactly.
Baba!
As soon as he is, like, right in the beginning of the movie, when he started talking, I'm like, oh, yeah, this kid.
This was a thing around this time, because I want to say they did it like Bad News Bears to somebody.
It was like, that kid can't act.
Yeah, let's just get some other grown male voice to do the sound for him.
Bob is in a lot of movies, too. He's got, like, two or three. He's in... He goes through puberty and he comes back in Demons.
Yeah.
He's in A Blade in the Dark.
I've never seen that one.
One or two other ones. Like, he was like the go-to Italian kid actor when Peter Bark was busy.
I was just going to say, yeah, Peter was busy.
And he's got that, like, the Haley Joel Osment kid hair. Like, the bowl cut.
Anyway. All I can hear is Mama. Like, that voice. So the two girls with the adult male voices wander into the smokehouse. And inside the smokehouse, we see a bunch of butchered pigs and just piles of hot dogs. Like, that cracked me up, too, because I'm like, wait, they're making meat sticks. Why is there just, like, 1,000 hot dogs on that table? Like, all right, random. But, so they go in looking around, and then the smokehouse doors swing open, and a bunch of, like, pig carcasses come swinging out, making them scream. They go to run, and then Ida jumps up squealing at them, wearing a pig head, scaring the shit out of them. This is where they drop their balloons and just run out the door.
All right, I have a serious movie question here, because for the longest time, I thought that was an actual pig head that they wore, and that freaked me out that Vincent was so far gone that he has a severed pig head, and Ida wears it too. But is it a mask?
I think it's supposed to be a severed pig head.
It's just bad effects?
It's just bad effects, yeah, because there's, in fact, when they walk in, we see sitting on the on the right side of the screen, we see like 2 hog heads.
Okay.
So I think that's kind of like they were like, oh, yeah, they just grabbed a pig head and shoved their own head in it. Like, I think it is supposed to be that fucked up.
Because I was always, like, and I look at it, I'm like, when do pigs have mohawks like that? But then I'm like, well, the effects in this weren't that great. Maybe that's what it is. Like, it's never really specified. It's more terrifying to me that they both just put a severed pig head on like a mask.
Yeah, and I think they would. The two of them definitely would. But so the girls come running outside, and we see the parents going to their car with an armload of smoked meats, and Vincent is just sticking a bumper sticker on the front of their car. He's like, oh, I got a bumper sticker for you, and he just slaps it on the front bumper.
Dumbass, that's not where they go.
That's what I was like, you put it on the back. What are you doing? So the screaming girls come running up, complete hysterics. Jump
that's
in the car.
Movie prop I'd love to have.
The bumper sticker?
Just to put it on my car. That'd be great. Oh, anyways.
Pardon me. So they come running up, jump in the car, roll up the windows. And the parents are like beside themselves. Like, oh, what's wrong? I don't understand. Oh, my God. What should we do? And then Vincent's like, I'll calm them down for you. And just roars at them. And somehow that works. Like. Was it like a double negative? Like, did it cancel out the other?
He also gives them Slim Jims.
Well, not the kids, though.
I think he hands them beef jerky.
No, because they jump in the car and roll up the window.
Yeah.
And they're like in the car screaming, and he just goes, rah! And then like the parents have all the, like he gave the parents the beef jerky.
Okay, I stand corrected.
But yeah, because that's why I was like, how does that work?
He's such a nice, reassuring old man. You know? I don't know.
Weird. But they happily get in their car with their meats and drive off. And this is the first of many times we see Vincent take out his weird little spray bottle and clean his hands. Like, he's always cleaning his hands.
It's like he had hand sanitizer well before it was invented.
Right.
I mean... it's a thing that butchers do. You guys ever hear of butcher's warts?
Mm-hmm.
So if you touch lots of meat, and especially pork, I have a friend that's a butcher, you have to constantly wash your hands or wear gloves, or viruses on the skins of the carcasses that you're touching go onto your skin, and you get tons of warts. So I think that's what it is. Or he's just crazy, and he's got OCD, because what a funny quirk to give a cannibal.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. I was like, it's probably a good thing that he's always sanitizing his hands, considering all the shit he's touching, but, you know.
That's funny, because my dad was a butcher for years, and I didn't know about that myself.
But now, here is the first time we see Vincent driving his tractor up to the ivy-covered wall. He unlocks a hidden door, goes inside, puts some 8-track on, looks around suspiciously, and closes the door. So now we haven't...
That's some Scooby-Doo shit.
Yeah.
Well, that's because movies got a 70s.
and that's the only way to show you somewhere.
That this was made in the 1970s. Yes. Put that 8-track in.
But that's the thing. It's like, at this point, we still don't know what's up with Farmer Vincent. Like, they're playing him off to be like this kindly old man with a secret. Dun, dun, dun. But we smash cut to a cop car skidding up to the motel. Cop goes into the motel yelling, hello, anybody home? And while ringing the bell on the front counter, he then meanders into the hotel or the motel proper, and the camera pans down the hall, and we see Ida hiding in the shadows holding a cleaver. She jumps out and grabs him around the neck, tackling him to the bed, yelling, "Guess who?" And then Vincent comes in, calmly tells her to let Bruce go. So this is where we find out that, you know, that's their sibling.
All right, I'm going to say this because Susie isn't here to say it.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce is a real bitch.
Yes, he is.
He's the anti-hero of the movie, sort of, but watching it now, he's a real piece of shit.
Oh, yeah. I'm not
Well, they all kind of are.
They are, family. Yeah. They're all...
Well, even fuckers. Her. Even the blonde, whatever her name is, Terry, I think.
Terry.
Yeah.
But see, like, I can't even remember any of their names. I have nicknames for, like, all of them.
I guess simpler times, he, you know, it was cool to be like Bruce back in the day, but not anymore.
No. Bruce does some very questionable things throughout this film. But,
so does Terry.
Yes, this is true.
Yeah.
But, just then, the girl from the accident, who we find out here is Terry, wanders into frame. Vincent goes out to talk to her, saying that he's glad to see she's feeling better. And he goes in for a hug, and she recoils. She tells him she wants to see Bo. And this is where Vincent goes, like, "I'm sorry, but he passed away this morning." She tells him she wants to see him. She doesn't believe him. And he goes, "Well, it's too late. I already buried him at sunrise." And I'm like, the timing seems awfully suspicious here. He died in the morning, and you buried him at sunrise. Like, wait a second. When did he die exactly?
I'm more concerned of why this random stranger is burying somebody and not calling anybody about it.
Oh, they cover
they
that.
Explain it.
They cover it, yes. But that was my first thought. Like, still. I don't care how small your town is or what, you know, oh, well, are some counties have this rule. No, bullshit. You still should be calling somebody. Going,
totally
hey, I'm going to bury this guy I found on the side of the road. You know,
and I fully believe that's why this line of dialogue is in the movie. Because I had the same thought. I was like, wait a second, that's not okay.
Wait, are you you're telling me that this rule still isn't in effect in like Grand Island?
Not as as far as I know. I think I think it's okay for like a deer, but an actual human being, maybe this is for the anybody under 12 kind of scenario. Maybe that's okay.
Like, if they blow the bridges up, isn't it like you guys are your own island nation?
It don't matter. We had part of A Quiet Place 2 shot here, so it doesn't matter anymore. We're historic.
Mm.
Cillian Murphy stood on our bridges and pointed at a boat. You know, that's it.
Oh, man. So, yeah, after he tells her that he buried Bo, she runs over to Bruce, like, hugging him and begging her to begging him to tell her it's not true. Tries to calm her down, telling everything will be all right, and is rubbing the hell out of her back. This is our first example of Bruce is a creepy fuck. So Ida gives her a robe and walks her over to the couch, and we find out here, like, all the family relations, that they're all siblings. and he goes, Vincent explains how he was out hunting, heard the crash, and went and found them by the side of the road. And then Terry says to Vincent, "Who gave you permission to bury him?" And this is where Bruce cuts in with, "Ma'am, in this county, under extenuating circumstances, it's okay." I was like, wait, what? What?
Still no. Bullshit.
Right. That's not allowed. But Bruce asks Vincent where he buried him, and he goes, "Well, the cemetery, of course." Smash cut to all of them arriving at the cemetery. Terry runs over to Bo's marker. There's no grave. You notice that? Like, Vincent didn't think, like, maybe I should dig up some dirt to kind of make it look like a fresh grave. He just stuck a cross in the ground. So, if he buried him just, like, a couple hours earlier, doesn't make any sense.
If she was just a little bit smarter, she'd be like, yeah, wait a minute. She must have had a really bad concussion or something.
I don't think she was too bright.
No.
Yeah. Later in the movie, we kind of get plenty more examples of that. But this is where Ida, Bruce, and Vince kind of all talk about, you know, what they should do. Vincent tells them that they're not hurting for room. What's that?
This woman's like, yeah. What should we? what is she going to do now? Like, she's not your problem. Right. She's not your problem. You guys are just being kind and letting her stay with you. Like, she Vince can is, go.
Right. Vince is going to make it his problem.
Yeah, not once is anybody like, where are you from? Because she could just be like, I'm down the street.
I have a family.
Yeah.
But yeah, he tells Bruce, because Bruce goes like, oh, I can set her up with, what does it said, some agency accommodations. And I wrote, a.k.a. the backseat of his Volkswagen. but Vincent tells me, he's like, oh, no, we got plenty of room. Plus, we could use the help around the motel. And so we smash cut to Vincent feeding the pigs and yelling, suey. He was like, suey, suey. I was like, that's a thing people actually said, huh? I thought it was from cartoons.
It probably not. I bet you they just were like, this is what people do with pigs. You should say it.
They do it in the Bugs Bunny cartoons.
Yeah, Bugs Bunny did it once. And Porky came running.
A car pulls up and it's Bob the health inspector dropping in for a spot check. Vincent tells him to make himself at home and lets him into the pig pen. And I was like, oh, burn. Because he opens the pig pen and is like, make yourself at home, Bob. So Vincent goes inside the smokehouse with a suspicious look. Meanwhile, Bob looks over at the ivy-covered wall with a suspicious eye. So what's over there? And Bob hears some noise coming from the smokehouse, heads over to peek through the window. Vincent pops out with a bloody apron and holding a cleaver and goes, how's everything look, Bob? And I love, again, here's that bad ADR work. Because it was just like, it sounded like Charlie Brown, like, arg! It just fell off the, like, little box he was standing on.
His Wilhelm scream.
Yeah. Well, it was like, it wasn't even the Wilhelm. It was, because at least that one, like, you know, it is understandably used for a scream. This just sounded like someone going, ah! Like, it was just bad. But he gets up and tells him, you better check those holes. Some of them look infected. And he storms off. Cut to later that night. Terry is watching the crazy preacher that's always on the TV in Motel Hello. And Ida is making more food because, you know, in case you forgot, she likes food. Vincent asks Terry how she's doing. She tells him she's confused and doesn't know if she should go home or stay or what. So she has a home.
AKA, she's stupid.
That crash really did a number on her. But she goes, Ida tells her she shouldn't go anywhere until she's all better. And Terry cries, telling them that Bo was the only one she had. And Vincent goes, oh, you know, here, none of us are ever really alone.
Stupidest line in the whole movie. I'm sorry.
I was expecting him to be like, you know, the Lord is always with, because they're watching a fucking preacher. I expected some kind of religious thing here. But instead he's like, you have yourself, you know. Yeah,
fuckhead that's alone.
Right. And then she's like, yeah, that makes sense. I'm like, no, it doesn't. And I love it because she gets so happy. Like, she's like, I feel really good. Like, yeah, fuck Bo. I don't care about him. I got me. Like, wow.
There's a song there waiting to happen. I've got me and only me. Fuck Bo.
Fuck Carpenter's Bo song.
I was like, fuck Bo sounds like some kind of 90s workout trend.
Y'all ready for this? Fuck Bo. It Billy Blanks when you need them.
It involves those stretchy bands.
Shaky weight. Anyway.
But so yeah, Ida and Vincent put Terry to bed. They're like, you know, you'll be fine. Just go to bed. She's like, yeah, I will. And so Vincent goes outside, sees Bob's truck on the car on the property. And, you know, like, you know, suspicious eye watching the car drive away. So we see Bob go over to the ivy covered wall. We hear a strange repetitive cooing sound. He climbs the wall and falls into the garden beyond. Now, amidst the plants, we see burlap sacks covering something in the ground. At first, Bob looks like he's going to leave. And then one of the sacks moves and growls. He goes over to investigate, pulling it off, revealing Bo. He's been planted in the ground with only his head and neck sticking out. His throat has a bloody bandage on it, and he's making this gurgling growl. Now, this is the shit that scared me as a kid. Like, that idea freaks me the fuck out.
The gurgle still scares me.
Yeah.
How do you think they make Cabbage Patch Kids?
Oh.
So wait.
They're just orphan children with their vocal cords cut.
Exactly.
It makes all the sense in the world now.
That's why the one turned cannibalistic later
on. Oh, okay. Wow. See, now, when you said how they make Cabbage Patch Kids, I didn't think immediately children. I thought it was like some kind of phantasm tall man process of shrinking down a body into a dwarf. Like, oh, do they bury them and put some kind of special sauce on them to shrink them?
It might be Cliff Clavin with, you know, his legs are cut off at the knees and shoes reattached.
Like Hank Hill's dad?
Yeah.
But... you know, so he freaks out. He falls backward when, you know, he sees Bo. And then he looks around all confused and suddenly gets bopped in the head with a shovel. Farmer Vincent comes up behind him, smiles and says, "Another spot check, Bob." And then we do a smash cut to a band in a van, Ivan and the Terribles. And I was like, if Susie were here, she would totally sing this part. But
this is where I wrote. Does John Ratzenberger ever not be 57 years old?
Yeah, because he looks 57, like perpetually, he's 57.
Yeah.
But hey, you know, puberty was rough on some people.
You know what, though? If you hit an age early, but never age beyond it, you still kind of win. You know, because if you're 70 and you look 57, hey, good on you.
High school must have been tough.
I don't know, you know, there's some ladies that like that whole gray hair thing, you know, Silver Fox. But I love the front of the van, because it's just like this, I know it's supposed to be Ivan the Terrible, but it immediately reminded me of fucking Rasputin. Like, it's just this, like, angry Russian man with hair flowing down the sides of the van. It's a weird painting.
It's that late 70s, early 80s party van.
Yeah. Oh,
by the
man.
Way, can we talk about the horrible beard the driver is wearing?
Oh, yeah.
It's obviously
on the whole
fake.
Movie.
Yeah.
God, that irritated the hell out of me.
You know, I think that was because they want to show progression of time, because you see him later and the beard is longer. But it's such a stupid thing because it looks horrible.
See, I think you're giving them too much credit. I honestly feel like they lost the previous beard and just cobbled together a new fake beard that was longer.
Like, they had scenes with him with a beard already, and then he went on to do another project and shaved it off, and then they went, hey, wait, we got to shoot more.
Right.
We don't have CGI, you know, take out your mustache money here.
Had to be.
Justice League.
You went and filmed some scenes for Debbie Does Dallas, shaved his beard, had to come back. We got to make this right. Let's
let's glue this beard on. Oh, yeah. Right here, I was like, you know, in the back of the van, we see the band getting high and singing. And I was like, why does he feed a man a cigarette in the backseat? Like, I don't understand why that happened. And then, yeah, I have a note here, just Ivan's super fake facial hair. And, we see, oh, God, we cut to Vincent laying bear traps in the road. And then we cut back to the band, you know, getting stoned in the van. And the fake beard guy, I'm just going to call him Ivan, goes, is like, oh, man, this red's too heavy. We better find a place to crash. Cut to them hitting the bear traps and crashing.
Right. Rich, they were heading to your place anyways. You just wasted your bear traps.
Well, no, he doesn't consider it waste, because remember, the traps allow him to be creative and artistic.
Still, they were coming their place anyway. You could have just waited.
Oh, it was so bad. But I love it because the van is flipped over and you just hear them struggling to get out. Like, there's no movement in there. Like, clearly no actors are in this van. And Vincent just walks over with a canister of gas and starts spraying it in the van. But you're really like, hey, somebody let us out. How do we get out of here? I'm stuck. Just rambling on.
And then as soon as he puts that hose in, one of them goes, hey, what's that?
Yeah. And then they just all pass out.
But then their like music is playing backwards. Like someone had a record player instead of a tape player.
It was Ozzy Osbourne. They were playing it backwards with lyrics of the devil.
It's so weird. So Vincent returns home and we have that that Little House on the Prairie music again. He picks up Ida, and this is where we get the weird trap conversation in the car where he talks about how he gets to be creative, and she's like, kind of artistic, and he's like, yeah. I'm like, what? I like cheese dialogue. I mean, it's terrible. So they head over to the garden, and Ida turns on the lights and speakers, and this is just creepy. She kind of prances around with her arms held high, like, while the choir music begins. I don't know, just, it's an eerie shot. So she goes and uncovers one of the growling heads and checks under his throat bandage, and we see that it's been stitched up. So she comments that it's...
Oh, I wrote a note for this scene, blown up on a flat screen. It's the worst makeup and job in the world.
Oh, yeah, it's bad. But still, again, seeing this as a kid, man, that freaked me out so bad. But she comments, you know, that it's healed nicely. And then mocks him as he growls at her, saying, when your vocal cords have been slit, you have to speak real clearly if you want anyone to understand. I'm like, if your vocal cords have been slit, how are you going to speak? Like, what?
Really clearly.
Apparently. So, but yeah, Vincent comes in with the ditch digger, and they dig some new holes and get to work on planting the band. This is also where she showed... Oh, good.
Is that the new Rob Zombie song?
Planting the band?
No, the ditch digger.
Dig through the ditches?
I was going to say, planting the band, I believe, is Judas Priest. Planting the band!
Dun, dun.
Planting the band!
Oh, man, but this is where we also find out that Bob was planted and had his vocal cords slashed. After they plant all the band in and you know, bury him down, Ida goes, funny looking critters, aren't they, Vincent? And he goes, yeah, maybe so, but you know as well as I do. And this is where we get the famous line, takes all kind of critters to make Farmer Vincent's fritters. And I'm like, you're making meat sticks, not fritters. I call shenanigans.
Yeah, but can you make a rhyme with meat sticks that doesn't have the word dicks in it?
No, but...
Takes all kinds of dicks to make Farmer Vincent's meat sticks.
That would have been better.
And made sense.
Yeah. That's right. He's only getting men in this movie, so... Well, not really, but...
Yeah. You get a couple ladies.
Ida could have had more... Ida would have been... She would have had more dimension if she was obsessed with dicks instead of chicken and ice cream.
Right. We find out that she does like the ladies a little later on.
Oh, yeah.
But so after they, you know, they comment on that, they get to work drugging the band and cutting their vocal cords. And again, it's so cheesy. But yeah, when she it's so cheesy that the last person that they drug, like the girl in the band, she doesn't even put the needle in. And you can clearly see that she doesn't have the needle like even close to her neck. Like the girl starts yelling and the needle is like an inch from her neck. So it's a very badly done scene. But again, the concept scared me so bad as a kid. So we cut to the next day. Vincent, Ida, Bruce, and Terry are having a picnic talking about how great Vincent's meat is. And this is the weirdest fucking story. So Terry asks him how he got started with all this smoking meats. And he tells him how when they were young, they were poor and couldn't afford an icebox. So they smoked everything. He goes, chickens, rabbits, squirrels, eels, even frogs. And I'm like, eels? Like, one of these things is not like the others. Because, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm sure smoked eel is delicious. But, you know, he's talking about these animals. If they didn't run fast enough, Granny smoked them. I'm like, yeah. It just didn't fit. But he goes on to tell her how Granny didn't like the family dog, how it always pissed her off. So he killed it and smoked it, and they all ate it for dinner. And Granny liked it so much that she taught Vincent her ancient secrets of smoking meats. And I love it how the group just carries on laughing, and Terry looks horrified. And she's like, she knew she was eating dog, and Vincent tells her, well, Granny never put any distinctions on any of God's creatures. She always used to say, and then they all chime in here, meat's meat and man's gotta eat. And then they crack up talking about the texture of the dog.
Where have I heard that before? It wouldn't have to do with any crossovers or anything. Carry on. No.
Exactly. But they carry on discussing the texture of the dog. Like, it's kind of like goat, only a little stringier. It's like, that's okay. And Ida whispers to Terry. Now, Ida's clearly drunk here. She goes, you want to know why the meat tastes so good? It's because he mixes the pork with, and then Vincent just punches her in the gut.
Oh.
And she burps when he does that.
I thought he stabbed her at first. Like, are you freaking kidding me? Well, first of all, I'm still thinking it's his wife.
Right.
You know, like, you just stabbed your wife in front of a stranger. And then was like, yeah, she's okay.
He's like, spices. I mix the pork with secret spices, and Ida knows how special that recipe is to me. Yeah.
Listen, abuse is okay if you're going to leak my secret recipe.
Right, because Bruce doesn't do it. Oh, they just like to have fun with each other. Like, fuck yeah. You! There's domestic abuse going on right in front of you.
Because Bruce and Terry go for a walk. And yeah, she's like, what's wrong with them? And he's like, oh, they're just a little weird. They like to have fun with each other. It's like, okay. Or I'm sorry, he says he's going to take her on a walk. We cut to Bruce and Terry on a boat in the pond. And I went, that's not a walk, Bruce. You're in a boat. But again, we get that fucking music, man. It's that Little House on the Prairie music. That la, la, la. While they're on the damn boat. But he then asks her if she wants to see a drive-in monster movie. And he says, the monster that challenged the world. So she agrees to go with him. Cut to later that night, Vincent and Ida go to the garden with the tractor. We see them feeding people with snorkels full of gruel. Like, that, again, freaked me out. And Vincent loves the sound of them eating. He's like, oh, listen to that sound. Isn't it beautiful? And she goes, oh, it's better than that awful hissing and wheezing. And he goes, oh, it's not so bad. They're good animals. I'm like, everything about this is creeping me out right now. So she tells him he should cut out their tongues and that they can smoke those. That would take care of the noise. He tells her he tried that, but the texture is all wrong. Won't mix with the pork. I'm like, what the fuck? And then start poking and prodding some of the people to check and see if they're ready. It's like, oh, I don't like it. But cut to Bruce and Terry arriving at, like, lookout point of some kind. And we see cars parked all over the place. Terry realizes that this isn't the drive-in, you know. I'm like, what clued you in? The lack of a screen? Like, hey, wait a minute. This is just the forest.
This is Rape Out Point. This isn't the movies.
And, like, I love this because this is the first moment of her kind of telling him he ain't getting any, because she's like, this isn't the drive-in, we better leave. And Bruce turns on the siren lights and announces, this is the sheriff, you are all violating the law, you have exactly 2 minutes to clear out, now move out please. And we get this ridiculous scene of all the cars desperately trying to drive away and crashing into each other. And then a naked woman just runs out into the spotlights, you know, because I wrote, damn everything, because we get to see front and back.
Why didn't she jump out of the car? Like, you're already in the car. Stay.
Because she ran out and stopped in the spotlight and then pranced back and forth until her very confused naked man came running after her and, like, got her back in the car and they drove away. It's like, what the fuck? So weird. But Bruce and Terry are now left all alone, and he pulls forward, calls the drive-in, asking them to feed the sound onto Channel 22, and they watch the movie through binoculars. So,
which, they can't do that.
Yeah, exactly. But movies got a movie.
Movies and
cheap
drive-in theaters.
Right. I love how movies like that. Okay. Movies that would go to the theater. There are so many examples of them showing people not paying to watch the movie in a drive-in theater. You know what I'm saying? Like, they want to make money on these movies in the theater, but they're like, hey, here's how you just watch it from your roof with binoculars and a radio. Like, wait, what?
Monster Squad put that idea in my head that it would be the greatest thing in the world to live right next door to a drive-in theater.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Well, and I mean, if you lived close enough, yeah, you could tune it in, because I remember the Transit Drive-In.
Yeah, there were houses right there.
Right, and if you know the, like, roughly the stations they're using, you can fiddle with the dial until you find, and I mean, yeah, it gets staticky, like, if you're not real close, but it lingers for a bit, because I've driven by there and messed with the dial.
I'm gonna tell you, one of those radio stations, it goes for a while, because if I've been at one and it's ended and other ones are still going, so I'll turn the radio station as I'm driving away. And mm-hmm. I got one all the way to the thruway one time. So it goes for a while.
So if you're one of those houses living near there, you could technically watch out your window.
Yeah. I know there's that one house that's right by the side. I'm sure you get a clear view of screen number two. You know, mm-hmm. I can almost guarantee you got a clear view of it.
Yep. I'd be sitting on my roof with the binoculars.
And I'm sure those people around there know the way to sneak into that drive-in by now, too.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
But so we cut to some new fodder driving along the road, talking about catching crotch rot from a ski instructor. That was just, again, if we're going to have random dialogue, that was pretty funny. You know, because she's scratching at her crotch saying, I think that instructor had something. But when suddenly they slam on the brakes because there's a shitload of cows in the road, becomes quickly clear that these are fake cows, and one of the girls gets out to move them out of the road, and then Vincent just jumps out from behind a cow and gasses her. Like, ha-ha!
Such an elaborate plot. Like, you went through a lot of work to gas him.
But remember, it allows him to be artistic.
Right, I was going to say, this is his time he could be creative. Though, they take way too long to realize those are fake cows, by the way.
Right.
Couldn't get cow out for some reason. Because, I noticed it right away. I'm like, what's going on with those eyes?
Right. Something is not right here. But yeah, so he gasses her, and the other woman starts up the car and drives away before Vincent can get to her. So we cut to Bruce and Terry. Bruce decides it's time to get grabby, and Terry tells him no. So of course he pushes it. She slaps him, and he takes that as an invitation to go into full rape mode, because Bruce is a real fucking bitch.
Fuck you, Bruce.
Mm-hmm. Suddenly someone comes over the radio begging for help. It's the fodder that got away from Vincent. Now,
it was her.
Yeah. He's like, okay. And she's like, wait, I didn't say that. And it's like, nothing about this is okay. Like, what the fuck is going on here?
The fact that she's a dumbass and doesn't take the opportunity to get out of the car.
Right.
And she basically, like, teams up with him to find this girl.
Right. It's like, I don't like it. But, so, cut to the woman driving away. Vincent is driving his truck right on her ass, ramming into her. And she's yelling to Bruce that someone is trying to kill her, and she gives her location. So Bruce and Terry take off. Vincent continues to ram her, and then she just stops being conscious. Like, she doesn't pass out. She just gives up. She goes, and falls over. I'm like, what happened?
She gave up on life.
Right. She was just like, I'm done, and fell over.
She was just in shock. You know, those people that get on the roller coasters and just faint.
Oh, I love those videos.
And when they wake back up in the middle of it, like, ah!
Immediately start screaming again.
And faint.
I know we're going on a tangent, but there's this one viral video that went around of a guy who kept fainting and waking back up on a roller coaster.
I just watched it.
Did you see the one where they dubbed over it with the window sounds?
No.
So it was like the windows closed, like the do-do-do-do. Then when he got, it was like do-do-do-do. Like the sounds were fantastic. But Yeah, so she just gives up, and I'm like, did the crotch rot get too much? Like, what happened? Like, how did she die?
Oh, the syphilis just got into her brain. That's right. What it is.
And I mean, we find out later she's still alive, so I don't know.
But, by the way, this is where I finally, like, because throughout the whole thing, I kept thinking Bruce knew what was going on mm-hmm. with Vincent and them. And so this is what it clicked on me that, like, oh, Bruce has nothing to do with that. Like, I kept expecting him to be like, ha-ha, I'm in on this too, kind of thing.
Right, like a Sheriff Hoyt type situation.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, Bruce is just a dumbass. Vincent pushes the car into the pond and escapes. And I love it because the car is just kind of sticking out of the pond. Like, no one notices. It's just there. And so Bruce and Terry call for the fodder on the radio but can't reach her. They end up getting stuck in a pothole. Bruce gets out to push the car, and we get the dumb pratfall where he falls into the mud.
Oh, yeah, going mud. Look at my face.
And I love that they have to drive the point home because Terry sticks her head out the window. She's like, Bruce, where'd you go? And then he raises his face up slowly while mud's dripping off of it. And she's like, oh, Bruce. Like, she has that look.
Like why should she be caring anyways right now? Like, the guy just tried to rape you.
Exactly.
I don't understand this woman.
She's so dumb. But so we cut to Vincent at the garden with Ida. She's stitching up the new fodder's throats. And Vincent hears a horn honking and looks at Ida and goes, did you turn off the vacancy sign? And she goes, oops. Now we cut back to the motel where we meet more fodder. I'm just going to call him Freaky and Deaky.
Can I ask you guys a question? I tried to find Freaky on IMDb, and I wasn't sure who it was. He looked a lot like Quark from Deep Space Nine.
He really did. Yes.
I don't think that's him, though.
It isn't.
I was going to say, yeah, I don't think it is either, but he definitely looked like he had that grin.
Yeah.
He looked a lot more like Gallagher to me.
Oh.
I could see the Gallagher. Yeah.
Yeah. Even though I knew it wasn't him either. But yeah, that's what he looked like to me.
Yeah, he's a fucking weird dude. But so Freaky comes out of the motel lobby with an armload of jerky and makes Deaky try some and goes on to talk about how he was raised on Farmer Vincent's meat. Deaky asks about the room and Freaky tells her, I don't know, place was empty. Suddenly, Vincent comes out in a robe and tells him, sorry, folks, we turned in early. Now, Freaky goes, I can dig it early to bed, early to rise, if you get my meaning. I'm like, what? No, I don't. How is that an innuendo? But they ask for a room and he agrees to set them up for the night. While in the lobby, they hear a siren outside and Freaky asks Vincent, hey, this place is cool, isn't it? And he goes, well, we can turn off the heat if you'd like. And he's like, you know, just he starts cracking up. I'm like, oh, that's funny. Yeah, because he said cool. Okay. Good God. So Bruce and Terry come running in. Bruce tells Vincent about the CB and the woman screaming. Vincent tells them that he wasn't listening. And Ida tells them that, you know, oh, I was, you know, it was teenagers messing with the truckers and the Smokies, had them all going crazy. And
hold on. Bruce comes in and goes, oh, hey there, lady. Like, already ignoring Terry.
This is true, yes.
Because he's like, a walking erection. He's already
set his eyes on somebody else.
He's a complete douchebag that only, just all he cares about is his dick.
it's true. So Bruce groans, you know, realizing that, oh, shit, it was just a prank. And he's like, I'm going to have to turn this in. And Bruce says goodnight to Terry and goes in for a kiss and is denied again. She shakes his hand and walks away. And I was like, haha, Bruce, you suck. So Bruce leaves and then Terry kisses Vincent on the cheek and goes to bed. And Freaky and Deaky come up and with a pamphlet and hand it to Vincent, asking them to tell him about the action, quote unquote. And Vincent is confused, but Ida catches on quick and points out on the little pamphlet they handed him that the Motel Hello is on it. And it says, a paradise for swingers.
Can I chime in here with something quick? I wrote this down.
Sure.
As a father of a little girl, this isn't funny. It's a little woke. But if you want a perfect example of how to treat women, look no farther than Bruce and Vincent. Bruce, walking erection, constantly trying to get his hands all over the ladies, when really it needs to be on their terms. See Vincent, who doesn't ask for a kiss, and gets one.
True.
It's not yours to take, it's hers to give. That's all. The more you know. Rainbow, star shoots across the sky. I'm going to go back into my corner now, Mike. Sorry for interrupting.
No, hey. You speak the truth, man. But this scene now, okay, speaking about being a father, this scene is fucking wrong and fucked up in all kinds of ways. Vincent tells freaking Deke that Ida will set them up in room one. And Deke tells Vincent to bring his daughter. She thought Terry was his daughter. And they want to swing with Vincent and Ida. And she wants to bring in his daughter. Like, okay, what about being swingers makes you okay with incest? Like, that's fucked up.
Is that a subtle nod to maybe she is his daughter?
What?
Is he your, like, her brother father? Ida and Vincent? Because then the next scene, like, the next line, they establish that Ida is the one that placed the ad.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. This is all fucked up now.
It takes all kinds of dicks to make Farmer Vincent eat sticks.
I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Because he's old enough to be her father.
This is true.
He could also be Bruce's father. Brother.
Father, brother, daddy, uncle. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, that scene just bothered me. Because she's like, bring your daughter. And he goes, she's not my daughter. And she's like, okay, whatever. Bring her anyway. You're like, just, it's like, what the fuck you? I don't like you, lady. So Ida goes and leads them to their room, and she tells Vincent, don't forget your stretches. Freaky gets all giddy about that. He's like, ooh, I told you this place was gold. And I'm like, cause he stretches? Like, okay. Like, Freaky
gets
excited.
It's bad innuendo. Use your imagination.
Yeah.
There's going to be a goat with lipstick, some toxic waste barrels.
Freaky just gets very excited about really weird things. But we get this amazing scene following that scene. Where we see Deke in a cat suit wrecking the motel room with a whip while classical music plays along with Wolfman Jack pretending to be a preacher on TV. The whole thing culminates with Freaky coming out of the bathroom in a plastic tutu, orange wife beater, and a black bra over the wife beater, holding a razor and says, Edie, where's my jelly?
He looks just like Silk Spectre in the Watchmen movie.
Oh my God. That scene will forever be different now.
He's her stunt double.
Oh my God. But I was like, how is this scene not in like a horror top 10 of like must-see scenes and movies?
It's hilarious.
Oh my God, it's so funny.
Just because it's horrible doesn't mean it's horror.
Well, it's a scene in a horror movie. Oh my God, but then he starts shaving his chest and goes, hey, I wonder if they're into animals. And she goes, I certainly hope so. And I'm like, what kind of swinging are you guys into?
I read on the notes that the original movie had some bestiality in it. So
it did. Yep.
Maybe that was a not, you know, as far as you're going to go with it.
Maybe, but I'm just thinking
after
like
the script.
I mean, I've met many polygamous couples. Like I've never heard anything about beasts and incest. It's like
you're supposed to pass judgment on them. They're really hammering home that these guys suck. Therefore, they have to die.
But they don't die, though. They know.
Oh, they crap, actually you're live. Right. Well.
We have to have some reason that they're evil. And obviously, it's because they're swingers.
How funny would it be if they showed up in like an 80s sex comedy later on, doing the same shtick,
like
but
the recurring character,
but like gurgling their lines? Like, how funny would it be if they were in like Bachelor Party?
That would be amazing.
And well, you know, like
it's like the couple from Eating Raoul. They show up again in Chopping Mall talking about their restaurant.
Yeah, they'd just be really funny.
But so she wraps her whip around his neck and pulls him over. He pulls out a bottle of oil and tells her, "Warm me up. Let's get greasy." I'm like, what the fuck? Because she just starts pouring it all over his clothes. Oh, God. And then Deaky looks up and there's...
He said, "Warm me up."
Wait, sorry, you kind of cut out. What was that?
He said, "Warm me up."
Right, but...
He wanted the shirt warmed up the oil and therefore he was warmed up.
That's freaking weird, man.
Because I don't know. Maybe it was some kind of warming oil.
I think it was just vegetable oil.
KY jelly.
Look,
couldn't find his jelly.
Yeah, he couldn't find the jelly.
Some of those lubricants, you need to work with them a little bit because if they're too cold, I've heard personally that they feel weird. So, you know, maybe a little friction goes a long way and then you're happy. Anyway.
He was told by a friend.
I was told by Josh Hibbard.
A friend
of... Oh, poor Josh. We've thrown him under the bus twice in this episode.
I'm having fun doing it.
Josh! We're going to eat him after he was oiled.
You watch it. He'll make sure Werner Herzog does not come back to your podcast.
He gave me a call the other day, and he was like, "Listen, Space Jam 2 is..."
Oh, my God. No, we're not going to talk about that.
Is horror. The Citizen Kane of animated films. And he was like, "By the way, let me give you do's and don'ts about personal lubricants." It was a nice conversation. Because we had to wait for Mike to get his coffee ready before the podcast. So
that was the conversation before I came up. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Makes sense.
Space Jam 2 is as bad as Shark Boy and Lava Girl. There.
Now wait a minute.
No, it is bad.
I refuse to watch Space Jam 2 and it is the worst movie ever.
Bad. It is bad. Though I did spot the Animaniacs in it, so I was a little bit happy with that. But I have a whole issue of like, hey, let's just throw in every Warner Brothers character ever. Let's just put Pennywise in the background.
Yep.
Let's leave Sharkboy and Lava Girl out of it.
No, we are not, because it is a bad acting just like that. It's horrible.
I love your two vendetta. Like that's great.
Sorry, Mike.
That's all right.
I'm having a little too much fun driving this off a cliff constantly.
Oh, Lord. I just can't wait for Josh to listen back to this.
Fucking Space Jam. Josh knows my feelings on Space Jam 2, by the way.
Oh, Josh feels your feelings on Space Jam.
I know. That's why he knows my feelings.
I still randomly get just... In the middle of the, like, I was training a new hire earlier in the week, and I just randomly got a text from Josh that just said, "By the way, fuck Space Jam 2.
You too?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll get, like, a 3 a.m. text message from Josh during a picture of a toy or something. He'll just be like, "By the way, fuck Space Jam."
Okay, oh. I know we're off topic, but I got to throw this one in here real quick. I used to do that to a guy who was a manager at the Regal, and he quit. And the person we replaced him with was somebody that nobody wanted. Nobody wanted him. We literally told our general manager, "Do not hire him as the replacement." And he did. And so I would literally every day send him a text going, "Fuck you for quitting." Like, fuck you. Fuck you, like almost every day. And when that replacement left, I went, "Okay, the end, the fuck you's end now. Don't worry."
We finally made him leave.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Was,
but fuck Space Jam 2. Josh, I agree with you.
Oh, so what you're saying is when we get to the list of most hated movies, we need to put that on the list.
I actually love the fact that I am hearing about people are stealing LeBron James's head off the toy and then selling them on eBay for thousands of dollars. Like, this is a thing. People are stealing them off of them in the stores, so there's no head there. And then there's one guy going around, I saw replacing him with Don Cheadle's head, though. Like, he printed out pictures of Don Cheadle's head and put him on there.
I've heard that it may or may not be Josh. He drives around the country stealing LeBron James's head. His vendetta is so crazy.
Would not surprise me.
Oh, Lord.
I'm in full support of it. All right, back to the movie. It's time for tubing, isn't it?
Not quite yet. We're getting off.
The Smiths show up.
No, we're still in the we just finished with Let's Get Greasy. Yeah. So Deaky looks up and Vincent and Ida are standing there holding rope and Freaky goes,
that's why I said the Smiths show up.
Oh, the Smiths, yeah. I forgot their last name. And he goes, oh goody, you're into bondage. And Ida tells him, you look good enough to eat, and they all get giddy.
Oh boy.
And so Vincent and Ida tie the two of them up. And I love this because Deaky goes, what's this, dog style? And he goes, no, ma'am, hog.
And he's so polite about it. Right. He's like, can you please turn over so I can tie your wrists?
Yeah. He's like, please put your hands behind your back, ma'am. Like, oh. But then they bust out the gas tank, and Freaky gets all excited thinking it's nitrous oxide. And Ida gasses him, and he passes out. Then
like,
Deaky
real quick.
Yeah, his head just thumps.
Yeah, it goes, thump. I'm like, whoa, because the next girl does not go that easily.
She's like, that doesn't smell right.
Yeah, she goes, that doesn't smell like laughing gas.
He says, you smell it, and we do the laughing.
Yeah. And they gas her. Oh, man, this... Oh, God, I know me and Mike were texting back and forth about this, but the next day, Vincent and Terry are talking. She tells him that she's getting used to life on the farm and picks up a container of Vincent's smoked meat. He looks at her and asks, how would you like it if someday I taught you the ancient art of meat smoking? And I just wrote, oh, Vincent, you dirty devil.
She's so stupid, she just doesn't get it.
Oh, yes. I want to smoke it.
She goes, I'd be honored. Oh, and he goes, well, some folks don't have the stomach for it. And she goes, mine's cast iron. And he goes, that's a good start. Like, all of this is just so wrong.
Oh, my goodness. She is so dumb.
Oh, she's so oblivious. And then, whew. Cut outside, Vincent hops on his tractor, and Terry tells him it's beautiful, and I'm like, wait, what?
The tractor? She was talking about the machine between his legs.
That's what I'm getting. Was she talking about his meat or the tractor? Oh.
And then she gives him a smooch.
Yep, he calls her honey, and she kisses him on the cheek, and he drives off happily. So now, Terry sneaks into the smokehouse and pokes around. Ida catches her, grabs her by the throat, and scares the bejesus out of her. And Terry tells her that Vincent told her this morning she was going to teach her, or he was going to teach her how to smoke meats. And immediately, Ida's like, oh, well, that changes things. And Terry's like, I forgot you just choked me. Like, just, she goes right back to being happy.
Want to go tubing?
Right. Well, because she sees, there's like, Ida basically tells her it's going to be nice to have another set of hands helping him out. And, she sees, like, they're standing next to a bucket of chum with a human foot floating in it. And Ida keeps, like, kicking it, trying to sink the foot, but it keeps bobbing back to the surface. And then she yells up, what a great day for tubing! I'm like, that's fucking random.
And, well, yeah. It was,
of course,
you know,
when she said that, I was thinking, like, they were going to pack sausages and actually go out to the lake. And go tubing.
Oh, because yeah, we cut to the pond with the two of them jumping in there in inner tubes,
which is just it's just for them to get a tit shot. I'm sorry,
oh, it is.
It's just them to get them titties.
She only wanted to go tubing because she knew she was wearing a white shirt.
Yep. She was like, let me get that shirt wet.
I thought Ida's tits look good, too. I'm glad I'm not the only one.
I was hoping to see him. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, man.
It sure saved me a lot of Google searching, man. I tell you.
I think Ida was hoping to see Terry's tits.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
She got a good view of them.
Yeah, we get the wet shirt titty shot. And then Ida pulls out a box cutter from under her swim cap and uses it to puncture her inner tube with.
Makes a loud fart noise.
Yeah. I did forget to mention one thing. Terry goes, I can't swim. And Ida goes, that's okay, neither can I. With these things, you don't need to be able to. So that's why, when her inner tube pops, she pretends that she can't swim. And Terry comes paddling over, and Ida just starts, pushing her underwater. Like, let me get on the inner tube. So she basically masks the fact that she's trying to drown her because she's panicking. And the music, of course, kicks up. It's like when Shatner fought the Gorn. It's that type of music. And suddenly, Vincent is there rescuing Terry. Now we cut to Terry in bed. Vincent is tending to her while Ida is praying. Terry wakes up. Ida apologizes to her, telling her she was scared and asks for forgiveness. Terry forgives her, and Ida's like, oh, well, that just makes me feel so much better. And she just leaves. And then
I'll leave you guys alone.
And then she goes, Terry tells Vincent, you saved me. And the porn music kicks in. And then Terry's like, fuck me, old man.
Consent goes both ways, people. All right? Let's just go with it. Goes both ways.
She had him fondle her boobs.
Yep, she dropped her titties out.
And which there was a consent right
and
there.
He was not comfortable with this. No.
But keep in mind, they did undress her.
We need to get married first.
Because
she's was not related to him. He's not touching that until they're married.
That's true. But now, she was dressed in the pond when they got her. She woke up in bed, she was naked. So somebody undressed her. It probably was Ida. And so she's trying to get Vincent to screw her. And he's like, well, it's not right. It's indecent. We should be married first. But then she's like, are you proposing to me? And looks all nervous. And Terry goes, I'd like to be alone for a little while. So Vincent walks out of the room. Now we smash cut to him talking to preacher Wolfman Jack about his wedding. So wait a second. You didn't get a yes.
How much longer does he have to live? He's an old guy. You got to rush these things.
But this is where I was like, wait a minute, married? What? Who's the woman with you then? Like, that's not his wife?
He likes to be ahead of the game.
Apparently.
And then I was like, well, wait a minute. What about Bruce? Like, all this confused me. I'm like, are you going after Bruce's father, brother? Because I don't know how they're related.
Look, if Farmer Vincent, if the rules are so loose, he can bury people without telling anybody, he can have as many related or not related wives that he wants.
I was going to say, basically, everything you said, Don, the answer is just yes. Because you were like, are they related? Brother, father, sister?
And by the way, after I wrote that note, I wrote, why Wolfman Jack? So that also could be yes.
She's not interested in Brucey, that's why.
This is true. See, and we'll find out that very shortly. But so they're talking about the wedding, and Wolfman tells him everything will be ready for his big day, which is apparently the very next day. Now we cut to preacher Wolfman walking up to Bruce sitting in his police car while openly looking at a hustler.
Is that a lewd magazine you've got there?
But I mean, he's just parked on Main Street in broad daylight looking at a centerfolded hustler. And Wolfman walks up, starts telling him congratulations, on Vincent's wedding. And then that's when he goes, is that a lewd magazine you got there, Sheriff? And Bruce looks all sheepishly and tells him, I confiscated it from some kids. And Wolfman goes, please give it to me so I can destroy it properly. And I'm like, oh yeah, I bet you will. Hi-o. You're gonna destroy them pages some good.
Oh, glory.
But Bruce hands over the Hustler and then asks Wolfman who Vincent is marrying. And he tells her it's Terry. Bruce flips out thinking that Vincent is forcing her to marry him. He's like, there's no way she would marry that old goat. He must be forcing her at gunpoint. Yeah, that's it. And he drives away. Meanwhile, Wolfman excitedly oogles the nudie magazine in broad daylight on Main Street. And that's what he's like, what do you say, like, good Lord or something like that?
He said, oh, glory.
That's what it was. Oh, glory. And then he puts it in his little bag and wipes his brow. And I'm like, this is your preacher? Like, it's a small town. I'm sure if they saw their preacher just, like, looking through a Hustler, people would be a little upset.
I don't think so. Not in that town.
Yeah.
All right.
They're all cannibals.
I have to go on a side tangent here. I'm not going to tell anybody, like, where this was. My old town. My preacher, and this is going to circle right back into this. The preacher that used to go to our, that ran our church. That when I used to go. They were swingers.
Oh, wow.
This just literally all just came back to me.
What religion lets you get away with that?
And then I'm Methodist. Okay. And the only reason I remember that is because my mother knew that because they would show up at the porn store that she used to work at. And so we stopped going to that church shortly after that. But my mother still worked at the porn store and saw them.
I mean, hey. Different strokes, I suppose.
Right, right.
Where's my
think
jelly?
I think the preacher and his wife were trying to connect my parents into that life too. So I think that's why we stopped going to that church.
Yeah, when the preacher asks to do you dirty, that's a little that's time to go.
Yeah.
But so Bruce rushes to the motel and finds Ida oogling a nudie mag. And he's like, you're sick. It's like, dude, you were just doing the same thing. Shut up. Bruce wants to see Terry, and she tells him that she's taking a bath. So he just decides to break down the door to check on her. Bruce sucks. So he breaks in the bathroom door. We get dem soapy titties. And then Terry covers herself, and Bruce comes up real close to the tub. So like he could, you know, look down in the water. And asks her about her marriage to Vincent. She tells him it's true and that she loves him. Bruce flips out saying that she can't marry Vincent because he's in love with her. Terry gets annoyed and jumps up out of the tub so we get to see them soapy titties again. And yells at Bruce, I love Vincent and he's going to be my old man. Get it? And Bruce tells her, you can't marry him. The law won't allow it. So, yeah. And then they argue about Vincent being insane. Bruce tells her he has syphilis of the brain and his pecker don't work.
Why won't the law allow it, by the way?
Because he's throwing a temper tantrum.
I think the town is full of laws that he's made up.
Okay. Exactly.
You can marry people whenever you want. You know, you can't marry it because of the law. I get it.
That should have been one of those scenes where he was like, he's right behind me, isn't he?
Yeah. They really should have had him say that. Because you see Vincent, like, pop up behind him with a shotgun. Terry looks shocked, and Bruce just turns around and sees Vincent there, and he's like, oh, hey, I was just joking. It was a funny joke, huh? And Terry... or no, I'm sorry. Right before that, Terry tells him to leave, saying, you better leave before Vincent comes back, and he goes... let him come. I'm not afraid of him. And then that happens. And he's like, oh, funny joke, right, Vincent? And he forces Bruce to get out and tells him that you're lucky. He says, you're lucky there's a lady present. Otherwise, you'd be dead. And he boots Bruce in the ass. And Bruce threatens him. Don't forget, I'm the law around here. Vincent cocks the gun. And Bruce is like, oh, no, Vincent. Oh, no, hold on. Don't shoot. And he runs out. And Vincent shoots a hole in the wall. It's very much Looney Tunes style.
So then, it's like, did you just shoot at your brother, nephew, cousin?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Yeah.
And he put a hole in Granny's wall. And this part cracks me up because we just see the cop car peeling out of the driveway while, like, stock shotgun sounds click off. Like, there's no gunfire. You just hear the sound, like, the same sound three times. It's like, all right, whatever. But we cut to Vincent giving Terry an engagement ring. And then Ida comes in with the champagne. They toast and drink. And Terry starts, Terry and Vincent start kissing.
Terry Ida takes still up. Still in her towel, by the way.
Right. Yep. still pretty much undressed.
Like, no worries. We're all going to be family now, anyways.
And apparently in this family, they all fuck each other. So, you know.
Yeah.
Ida takes out some kind of drug that's like dark green and puts a healthy amount in Terry's glass of champagne. So the whole glass turns green. And, you know, like, wouldn't she know something is up when everyone else is drinking like light beige color, light pink color. And she's got this green liquid in her glass.
Well, you would if you weren't a complete moron.
This is true. But she drinks it, passes out, and then Vincent looks at Ida and says, let's go to work. So we cut to Bruce checking the site of the motorcycle accident, and he finds something in the tire of the motorcycle. We don't find out what it is just yet. Now we cut to Vincent, Vincent and Ida with weird spinny hypno discs at the garden.
It's disco night in the Cabbage Patch, people. Come on.
They use them to hypnotize Ivan and the Terribles so they can kill them without pain. So the band becomes hypnotized. They put nooses around their necks attached to the tractor. Ida pulls the tractor forward, snapping their necks. They then haul him up out of the ground. And did you notice the guy in the middle when they were dragging him?
His hand kept moving?
He kept putting his hands out in front of him like, oh, let me stop. Like, he couldn't play dead.
He was a zombie already.
Well, I want to know why they picked those three, because obviously the guy from the motorcycle and the inspector were already in the ground. They should be ready before these three.
This is true. But, you know, that's a good question. So we cut to Bruce finding the crashed cars in the pond. Like, they're barely just under the surface. He's literally standing in the water, like, not even ankle deep. He's shining a flashlight like, there's all these cars under there.
Like, don't forget the bong.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The bong floats to the top. Like, how did nobody notice this before? It's just ridiculous. But Vincent and Ida haul the bodies back to the smokehouse and begin cleaning and prepping them. And we get the Vincent tasting people moment where he carves off a piece of the carcass and he's like, pretty good. Back in the garden, Bo
gets... Josh tastes delicious. Sorry.
But then, Bruce comes back to the motel and begins poking around. He wakes up Terry, who's still groggy, and tells her about how he did some detective work and thinks Vincent may be trying to kill her. She, of course, thinks he's full of shit, and he begs her to hear him out. Now, back at the smokehouse, Ida complains again how she's hungry. Just in case y'all forgot, she's fat, because fatties like food. It's funny. Laugh. Like, I'm so sick of
it. Ha. Ha.
Exactly. So Vincent begins to prep and saw the bodies. And Ida goes back to the motel to make a fried chicken sundae. She overhears Bruce telling Terry that they got to get out of there before Vincent comes back. He goes on to tell her about the bullets that he found in the motorcycle's tire. Like, he shows her the bullets and tells her about the cars in the pond, while Ida slowly sneaks up on the other side of the door and eavesdrops. Terry pulls off her engagement ring and puts it back. And I was like, man, this chick doesn't need much convincing to do anything, does she? Like, you know, it's like she was just ready to marry the guy, and he's like, no, he's bad. She's like, good enough for me. Take the ring off.
Well, let's think. All this really happened pretty quickly, though, also after the guy she was riding on a bike died.
Right.
Like, gave no time.
That's what I'm saying. She doesn't need convincing, like, at all. Like, anybody tells her this is how it is, she's like, must be, and just follows along. Oh, the characters in this are terrible. But Bruce leaves the room, Ida jumps him, knocking him out by wiggling him gently in the hallway. Like, I want to know how he got knocked out. She grabbed him and just shook him, and he passed out.
She has some superhuman strength, though. We find that out.
True.
Yeah.
But she steals his gun and grabs Terry, telling her it's time for her lesson. Gonna teach her the finer points of meat smoking. Then back at the garden, we see Bo digging out the rest of the victims. Ida forces Terry into the smokehouse, but makes sure to cop a feel before she does so. Did you guys notice that?
Well, Terry's such a stand-up guy.
Well, no, Ida grabs Terry's boob.
Oh, that's right. Never mind. I'm sorry. I'm thinking just Bruce is a constant pervert. Never yeah. mind.
No, Ida goes, she's like, you get in there now. And she goes to shove her, like, she has her hand on her shoulder, and then she shoves her hand under her boob and, like, shoves her forward.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, but I rewound it because I'm like, did she just grab her tit? I was like, yeah, she grabbed her tit. So, now we cut to March of the Vegetables as they walk through the foggy night toward the motel. And back in the smokehouse, Vincent tries to tell Terry or talk to Terry about what they're doing. She spits in his face. Ida laughs at him, and he tells her to get Bruce and bring him back to the smokehouse. Ida heads back to the motel and gets attacked by the vegetables. Back in the smokehouse, Vincent is chopping up a body. Terry is disgusted, and he's like, oh, come on, girl, ain't you ever cleaned a fish? As he holds up a foot.
They are not the same thing!
He basically tells her how he treats his stock better than most farmers treat their animals, and how he's really doing them a favor when you consider how bad the world is today.
Really? Really? He treats his stock better than... He buries them up to their neck and cuts their vocal cords.
Yep.
But don't worry. Better than your animals?
Yeah, I was going to say, how they treat veal. I mean, you know. But he then, you know, he makes sure to hypnotize them before he kills them. So, you know, they don't feel nothing.
They get a good, nice disco party. That's true.
Yeah. But she asks him what right he has to play God, and he tells her, oh, I'm not playing God. I'm just helping out. He goes, there's too many people in the world and not enough food. This takes care of both problems at the same time.
Yeah, wrong. Then,
that's true. Vincent goes and gets the corpses into the smoker. Terry tries to escape while he's busy. She gets to the door, which, of course, is locked, and Vincent tells her it's locked from the other side. He slowly approaches her with the gas tank. Tells her, I'm sorry, you know, I wish I could have introduced you into my world, you know, on my own terms. And he tries to gas her, and grabs a hold of her, forces a gas on her. You know, Terry passes out. We see, meanwhile, Bo is climbing around on top of the smokehouse looking for a way in. Vincent ties the now unconscious Terry to the saw belt. And just then, Bo jumps through the skylight and attacks Vincent while growling and gurgling. They have an old man fight for... Vincent beats Bo with his meats. He literally picked up a sausage stick and started whacking him with it. And Vincent gets... Oh, good.
He said a sausage stick.
I'm sorry, that point... At this point, we deserve a Beavis and Butthead laugh. Go, yeah, yeah, sausage stick, yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, Vincent gets Bo over to the smoker doors, chokes him out, and drops Bo into the smoker and closes it up.
To be honest, this is a pointless fight, though, because there's no point of bringing Bo into this, then, if Terry's not awake to see right. that he's still alive. So, yep. like, this is just a pointless fight.
Exactly. She's still none the wiser that he was alive. She's right. Like he died in the accident and is buried in the cemetery.
Exactly.
But... Back at the motel, Bruce wakes up confused and realizes his gun is missing. He grabs one of Vincent's shotguns and heads to the smokehouse. He shoots the lock off the door, yelling for Terry. Goes in, finds her tied up and unconscious. He goes to help her when he hears a chainsaw. He turns, and out of the back room comes Vincent wearing a hog head and wielding a chainsaw. So Bruce gets a chainsaw, and they have a chainsaw fight. And
Which is a pretty awesome chainsaw fight, I will admit.
Oh, yeah.
But this was a thing in the 80s, too. There was always a chainsaw fight.
Right.
I'm not going to lie. That's on my bucket list of things to do before I get turned into beef jerky, is to have a chainsaw fight.
I mean, you know, Vincent's constant laughing in this scene. It's annoying now, but yeah, it used to creep me out. Like, because it's just nonstop. He's just cackling throughout the entire fight. And, Bruce keeps getting slashed by Vincent, but there's no blood or reaction. Like, did you notice that? Like, every time Bruce got cut, like, he didn't even react to it. But
it's very weird.
Yeah. They accidentally turn on the saw belt while fighting, and Terry slowly starts moving toward the bandsaw. She wakes up, screaming for Bruce to help her. The two continue to fight. Bruce swings his saw and gets it stuck into the wall, Then Vincent goes to swing and walks right into the saw, getting himself killed. Like, he's not dead, maybe, but it's just a weird moment.
You know, I own a chainsaw, and in the instruction manual, like an IKEA manual, there's pictures that says, don't chainsaw fight with your brother, son,
and nephew. Then
don't walk into the chainsaws, because they'll cut you. So clearly, Vincent didn't read the Ryobi chainsaw manual that he should have.
Truth. But Terry is about to get killed by the saw when, dun-da-da, Bruce swings out of the smoker on a hook and shuts off the saw just in the nick of time.
Well, now we have to establish he's the hero, so of course he's got to swing in.
They really should have thrown in one final bit of him trying to get in her pants and her shooting him down.
Well, they kind of did, but it wasn't her. It was because Vincent makes a noise in the other room.
Yeah, because they hear a moaning coming from the back and go to investigate, finding that Vincent is still alive and has the chainsaw stuck at him. Now, I wrote here, God, I wish Susie was on this episode, because there is a story here, and I'm sure, you know, Susie could tell it better than me, but way back when I first started working at the hospital, and she used to work downtown at the actual falls, she pranked me. And I didn't know the phone number for the falls, and it like for the what was that, the visitor resort or whatever they had there, the visitor center.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know the phone number for that, so it just showed up as like a random Niagara Falls phone number. And she put on this British accent and was telling me about how, and I had no idea it was her, was telling me about how her and her husband are on their honeymoon. And she was like, oh, this is ever so embarrassing. She's like, we were having relations and we were using an apparatus and now it's stuck in me. And I froze because I was like only a few months into this job and I'm like, what? Like,
so that's your job? You field the calls to the hospital for people like, do I need to go to the hospital?
Oh, every call that comes in the hospital, every call that goes through the hospital, I'm the guy that handles all of it. Like, I handle the emergency calls, everything. So basically, I've heard a lot of weird shit in the last 21 years, but this was early, so I hadn't heard a lot yet. So it was kind of preparing me for what was to come over the years. But I was like, let me connect you with our emergency room. Because I'm sitting there thinking, like, this person has a dildo stuck in him somewhere.
But we used to do that to other Regals, but finish the story. Go ahead.
Then she started cracking up, and I was like, as soon as she laughed, I'm like, wait, oh my God, I can't believe you got me. The only other person to successfully prank me was my dad when he got he just got a cell phone and he called. And he just goes, hello. And I'm like, hi, can I help you? He goes, I got my peepee caught in my zipper. And I went, what? And then when he laughed, I'm like, damn it. That's the second time.
Oh, yeah. We used to call up other Regals. And go and literally ask for movie show times for movies that we knew were not playing. And be like, hey, when's after closing too, by the way, we would say after we're like, what's the next Spy Kids 2? And they'd be like, Spy Kids hasn't played in 3 years. Yeah, but what's the next show time? Or and like they would keep going because they wouldn't know it was just us from another theater, you know. They didn't know my voice. We would also do stuff like I left my pants in theater 4. And they would go and look and come back and they'd be like, there were no pants in the theater, ma'am, the movie's still playing. And I'm like, no, that's where I left them. I just left them. And they finally hear like the other manager giggling in the background and they go, is this Niagara Falls? We're like, yes. And they would just hang up. Sometimes they would do us too, but we would never know.
I kind of wish we thought to prank the other media plays when I worked at Media Play, but we never did that. We did, however, play pranks on the entire store by putting weird stuff on the overhead. My favorite was the Master P doll that came out, that when you squeezed his chest, it was this really bad voice box that went, "Megan say, na 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 na." And we would play it on the overhead randomly throughout the day. And, like, the managers were even in on it. So it's like, customers would just be confused as hell. Oh, that was fun. But anyways, we got off topic.
Always.
So Farmer Vincent is there with the chainsaw stuck in him. And Bruce helps him take off the hog head and turn off the saw. And Vincent goes, it's like, "You can have the motel and the garden." He tells him about the secret garden and makes him promise to take care of his animals. And then just before he dies, he goes, "I'm the biggest hypocrite of them all." And then he goes, "I use preservatives." Like, we thought we was going to say he killed people, but no, he used preservatives.
I love that ending.
And then Bruce closes Vincent's eyes and his head lolls over. Then Terry and Bruce hear a scream and head over to the garden, where they find one bag remaining. They pull it off.
Of the West.
Exactly. They find Ida's feet sticking up out of the ground. Now, Bruce touches him and she wiggles around. You know, he doesn't seem too concerned with helping her, though, because he pokes her again and she kicks her feet again. He's like, fuck her.
It's like, obviously there's movement. She may be alive.
Yeah, you could still get her out. But he lets her suffocate. But we
poor
cut
Ida
to
deserve better.
Right. We cut to Bruce and Terry walking along the motel porch, and he's telling her how he was brought up there, but he's glad he ran away from home when he was 11, or Lord knows what would have happened. I'm like,
where the fuck did that come from?
Right. I'm like, you just talked about growing up like with Granny and Vincent and Ida, and like you were talking about your family life like it was so great in like couple of scenes ago, and now you're talking about how you had to run away from home when you were 11. Like, it doesn't make any damn sense. But Bruce tells her, he goes, "Well, there's gonna have to be some kind of investigation," and she goes, "I would burn the place down," and he goes, "You mean like arson?" No, that other kind of burning a place down, not arson. Like, what the fuck do you think? God, I hate Bruce. Like, he's such a terrible character. She looks back at the motel hello sign with the flickering O and says, "It's an evil motel." And then the O explodes like the fucking Death Star, and we get the credit crawl.
Is it like the Friday the 13th opening?
Right.
Like Jason's mask is going to shoot through it.
I was like, why did it blow up like the Death Star? But
those
yeah.
Damn rebels.
The rebels took out Farmer Vincent. Oh, so yeah, that's Motel Hell. And it's all of its wacky glory. But we already good.
It's one hell of a movie.
Yep, sure was. We did mention a lot of the trivia already, but the dueling chainsaw part, apparently that wasn't in the original script and was thought up kind of last minute, and it was like the most difficult part for the entire film. So it was like, I'm glad they put it in, because that was like the coolest part of the movie. But yeah, that wasn't originally in the script. Also, apparently Toby Hooper was originally going to direct this for Universal Studios, but they passed on it. Yeah. So Hooper was like, nope.
That would have been a wildly different movie.
It really would have been. And then Harry Dean Stanton was originally approached to play Farmer Vincent, but he declined. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Good for him.
Was Arnold Schwarzenegger considered for the role?
I was hoping. I was looking, because I love that. I love how many different people are always on the IMDb list.
What did you say his name was? Richard Dean Anderson?
Harry Dean Stanton.
Oh, I thought you said Richard Dean Anderson.
Not MacGyver.
Ow.
Although, he would have found a way to get away from that chainsaw.
Yeah,
with just a rubber band and a nail.
If it wasn't for those meddling kids,
he would have gotten away with it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, yeah. Anybody have any final thoughts on this 80s epic?
I got it nothing. It takes
all kinds of dicks to make Farmer Vincent's meat sticks.
That is definitely, like, if we titled our episodes other than the film title, that would be the title.
I want some beef.
Do you want some beef?
Yeah.
Hey, I got Chinese food waiting for me. Who knows what meat's in there?
I am in a
swirl.
I'm in a mood for a beef stick.
Go get some Slam GMs.
You know, I might go to the res later and just see what they got.
I will say venison jerky, if it actually is venison. I mean, it could be people, I don't know. Venison jerky is really friggin' good. So I never know.
You so can't go wrong with just plain old beef jerky.
Oh yeah.
Or people jerky.
Or people jerky, yeah.
It could be people.
Josh jerky.
Well, as apparently Josh is delicious, as we've discussed, so you know. But
do not tell him about this. Just let him hear the episode.
Oh yeah. No, I'm just gonna tell him he's gotta listen to the episode. That's all I'm saying.
Josh, I am not behind the EDU as jerky. All right. I am not behind this.
Beefy
Josh
or
Josh. Yeah, Josh Jerky. I would vote for somebody with a little bit more meat on them.
Josh Jerky, brought to you by Space Jam 2. Only in theaters.
And HBO Max.
HBO Max.
So, Don, do you have any final thoughts on your first viewing? Probably last viewing?
It probably won't be my last viewing. This will probably be something that if it's on, I'll watch it. I'm not going to seek it out. But if it's like, oh, hey, it's that movie. Let's watch him try and rape that. Nope. Yep, he didn't. All right. Let's see this girl try to fuck this old man. Yeah, nope. Okay. We're, you know, that's yeah. Good times, guys. Guys,
Good times indeed.
Good times.
Well, I guess we should mention our social media. So if you guys aren't following us yet, why? This is true. We haven't had a lot of new followers lately. Although Instagram is blowing up. Facebook, not so much. But we are the Boogeyman's Closet on both Facebook and Instagram. If you guys aren't following us, Maurice handles our Twitter. And what is that, good sir?
Also not getting a ton of attention. At Boogeyman.
At Boogeyman's the. There you go.
At Boogeyman's the. Duh.
Guys, it's okay. I don't get much on my Instagram or anything either, so don't worry.
Yeah, it's all that damn algorithm. That's it. It's the algorithm's fault.
Oh, it's always the algorithm. Damn TikTok. Support my TikToks.
I mean, there we go. I need to create a TikTok. That's that. That'll solve everything. I'll create a Boogeyman's Closet TikTok. but yeah, we're still doing our giveaways. So check that out. And then we also have a Patreon for anyone interested. It's $3 a month for all of our uncut episodes and one exclusive episode every month. The higher tiers get you stuff in the mail. And then Mike, we'll give you a chance to promote our other podcast.
That's right. Listen to Count Creepyhead's Saturday Morning Monster Mash with episode 9 coming out probably around the same time as the Motel Hell episode, and it's tentatively titled Corpse Water. with us going all over the place as usual, with this week's heavy emphasis on posters that we put on our walls as kids, among other things, and Josh cracking us up and all kinds of fun stuff.
I have to say Negative Nancy makes a return. So
yeah, for everybody that loves Negative Nancy, she pops up when you least expect it.
You guys need to hear it. So, but thank you both for joining us, Don and Mike. It was a pleasure as always.
Thank you for having me.
Yes.
And
I'm always
time.
Available.
Well, I guess we'll wrap it up here then. So, as always, this is Mike saying goodbye.
See ya.
Fuck Space Jam 2.
Scrappy dappy doo.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, follow us on Instagram at The Boogeyman's Closet, where you can stay up to date with everything we have planned.